This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Up next, it's Art Focus with host Joseph Galaban. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.
Andy Warhol is a shush scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell him apart at all. Andy Warhol is a shush scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell him apart at all.
I'm Joseph Galaban, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest is Diane Arvio-Augie, whose show Synergy is now on at the Mark Woolley Gallery in Pioneer Place Mall through July 14th. Arvio-Augie's work takes as its starting point the light of stars and travels deep into abstract territory with the spiral as its core detail. Welcome, Diane. It's lovely to have you here at KBOO.
Thank you, Joseph. I'm happy to be here as well.
So this is a show of abstract paintings. Would you call them abstract expressionist?
Well, I'm sure that they fall into that great catchword. They are abstract expressionists, and I am abstractly expressing myself. So, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they're mostly maybe 5-6 feet square, oil
many
on canvas.
Yes. Many of them, the majority of them in the show are larger paintings than some of the small works on paper. Mm-hmm. So the canvases run around 5 to 6 feet high and about 4 feet wide.
Mm-hmm. Sort of, yeah. And they're big, bold, abstract paintings. A lot of color in there, you know, a lot of movement and texture. There are lumps and clumps and drips and things like that. They're not like crazy Pollock, but they're, you know, there's some surface to them.
Yes, for sure.
And a bit of drama. And the beginning idea was the idea of the spiral. So can you tell us why you began each piece with a spiral?
Well, a spiral became interesting to me about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I started doing some drawings from actually images of constellations. And I began to understand that the spiral is very integral to all of life. You know, it's in our DNA. It's in a pinwheel, a carousel, a tornado. So it's something that I think all of us humans can relate to. And I found it fascinating. And I looked at the images of the constellations, for example, and I could see how they were constantly changing in terms of form and color. And they were just so magnificent and beautiful to me. I couldn't get my eyes off them, actually. Mm-hmm. They're just beautiful.
And one of the sources was OMSI.
Oh, yes, for sure. I love going there. I could keep going back and back to OMSI and watching the movie of the Hubble. It's quite extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. So these works, you titled them all after the fact. So you don't begin with a word, you begin with a concept.
Exactly.
A visual concept.
I work visually. And then after it's all done, they're named.
Yeah. And the kind of postcard work for the show, the one that's on the postcard is called Vermilio, the Italian for red, vermilion. And it has a kind of a spiral in it. Can you just tell us how that picture came about from beginning to end?
Wow. It does have a spiral in it that turned more circular. I had some images of some constellations that had some reds in them, and I became more interest as I worked. I developed the contrast and of the dark greens, and tried to. Just kept struggling to see how it would work as I layered upon layered of paint. If you look at the painting closely, you can see where I have gone over areas. So, Joseph, the process is one in which I start with a lot of maybe forms or images on the images on the canvas, and then. I edit it out, and I come to a resolution that feels right for me.
So, and each work begins with a series of sketches.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, which are oil on paper.
Yes, they are. I like working that way. And there are oil-based paints. There are oil paints now that are water, that I can use water to thin them with, and that makes it kind of fun and easy in the studio to use
okay.
those.
What, yeah. what brand is that?
Don't ask me.
You don't look at that kind of thing?
Well, they're new. And yeah. the ones, the particular one that I was thinking of is from China, and I can't remember the Chinese name.
Right.
Winsor Newton does put out some very fine ones, however.
Mm-hmm. So you've got your sketches, and then you attack the canvas, you start. And how long would you say you spend on one work?
I like that word, attack. It depends upon the day whether or not I attack
right.
it.
Right.
How long would I spend on the work? Well, each work can last up to a couple weeks, from a couple weeks to a couple months or even 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And you work several simultaneously?
I do. I usually have about 12 to 15 pieces going at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so each painting has a palette, a color palette that you've assigned it, sort of. And then you physically make palettes and you know, so you can remember which painting has which color paints, right?
Right. I mix my own colors that you'll see in each painting, and I have a different palette for each one.
Mm-hmm.
And I do use paper plates from Costco, and they're very handy because it does help me remember what I mixed for each painting mm-hmm. that I'm working on.
Right.
And
you can chuck them away when they get all sticky.
Oh, they usually dry up before I have a chance to throw them away. But I think the point is that I find that as I mix the paint, the work becomes richer and richer for me. And that's one of my goals is to make a very rich, beautiful painting.
Mm-hmm. So they're not only getting more detail in a number of layers, you're also mixing the paints in newer combinations as you go through a painting? Is that correct?
Sometimes, yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Right. Now, you talk about the way you work through a painting, and you say it has to resolve. Can you explain what that means? What does a painter mean when I say this painting has to resolve?
Joseph, we spent hours in art school trying to figure out what that meant.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I can. It has to be right in terms of the balance, in terms of the emotion, the color. I tend to like paintings that are reduced and edited, so they're not too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a particular taste of mine. So when I resolve a painting, usually that's a part of it.
Mm-hmm. There's a painting, Galactica, that we looked at that has, pretty bright colors all over it. And then there's a big gray patch down the right-hand side, which does not have much texture. You know, it almost looks like graffiti,
right?
Like when people cover up graffiti.
Right.
It's kind of brutal. And I was kind of surprised by this, but you said that was part of the resolution of that painting.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that one?
That painting was a very difficult child for a long time. And I worked it and then put it aside so it didn't become overworked. It took a few months.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, I thought I would try that particular gray that you noticed, and see if I could make that work.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it did. It does.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're painting for yourself at this point. You're not, you know, at that point in a paint, or maybe always when you're painting, it's all to satisfy yourself.
Well, in some ways, you could say art, all of art does that, and all artists do that in a sense, even
mm-hmm.
if you are presenting something to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You're the first critic. It has to go through. It has to get it past you before you present it to anybody.
Yeah.
So in that sense, as I say, I think all art is that way, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guest is Diane Avio-Auji, whose show Synergy is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery, and it's going through July 14th. There's another painting called The Lightness of Being, which you said you don't work with, you don't start with a word, so how did the title of this other work of art come into it?
I just loved the painting when I finished it. And I remembered the beautiful book by Milan Kundera, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. And on a very intuitive level, that came to my mind, and I decided that I would call it The Lightness of Being.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't deliberately want a narrative in my work, but somehow the emotion is transmitted in the work.
Mm-hmm. So that title is a term of affection.
Yes, in a sense, for the painting. For the ideas that Kundera had.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you had another one called Butterscotch Loop. Again, it has two kind of, they're like egg shapes rather than spirals, right? And just tell us about how that painting, what it means to you, because...
Okay. Well, they are spirals, Joseph. They connect. So when you look at some of the galaxies, you can see when they collide how the spirals work. So...
Mm-hmm.
That there are two spirals that are connected in there, and one flows into the other. And then there are gestational shapes, if you will, that I had worked inside of them and built those up. But over a period of time, I began to realize that I still hadn't come to a conclusion with that painting. And so I very gradually began to wash layers of light through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked for me.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about a painting by Titian and the idea of letting light in. You know, it was kind of a late painting by Titian.
Right. There's some parallels there, again, on an unconscious level, probably.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the Titian painting in the Academy...
do you know what it's called?
Well, I think it's the Entombment, and it was his last painting. A magnificent transition in paint for Titian, because the whole painting transformed itself into light. And I never forgot it. So I'm not saying that I'm painting like Titian.
No.
But I remembered that when I was painting and this particular piece. And I am always amazed at how our lives are constantly being transformed from a very tiny egg, if you will, to incredible complexities in terms of physical, social, intellectual, and emotional in our lives. And then gradually, as we get older, as we get to the end of our lives, like Titian, we let go. And we let go of all those, many of those complexities. And what remained, for Titian anyway, and in this painting, is just a beautiful light.
Mm-hmm. So you think maybe unconsciously, or you consciously had that feeling, but then you unconsciously linked it to Titian?
Probably.
And his use
probably.
Of light.
Probably.
Okay. You're like a morning worker, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your routine?
I get up in the morning and basically I don't have any social contacts in the morning except for giving my husband a big kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't turn on the TV or computer. I get my coffee or tea and I go right to work so that my mind is very, very clean and ready for work. And I sit in the studio and start figuring out what I'm going to do that day.
Mm-hmm. What time do you knock off?
About 2.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is. It's wonderful.
And what music do you listen to when you're working?
When I start a series, I like Bach. I like the Goldberg variations because they're very clean. And I understand the precision and the discipline. I understand that it helps me as I start a series because I look for that in my own work so that there's a real connectedness in the body of work. And then I progress to other composers, and I can go to Mozart and Beethoven, and I can go to the Beatles and start listening to some, you know, some Hispanic music, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a progression for me.
So in the beginning, you need something a bit more meditative.
Totally, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, let's hear a piece of music that you typically listen to. It's Johann Sebastian Bach's 6 Unaccompanied Cello Suites, and this is Suite number 1, played by Yo-Yo Ma. ¶¶ That was the unaccompanied cello suite number one by J.S. Bach, played by Yo-Yo Ma, and my guest Diane Avio Auji chose that music because it's easy to listen to when you're working on the sort of complex beginnings of a painting.
Yeah, sure.
And then as things loosen up a bit later, you crank up the Wagner.
Oh, totally. All right.
So you grew up in a blue-collar immigrant family in Portland, and you had music growing up.
Yes, we had music in our
home. Yeah, but you didn't have any art much.
Not in terms of art galleries or the museum or paintings around. No, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't.
Just because it was overlooked?
Well, I don't think my parents ever really overlooked anything. I just think that at that time, there were these, you know, they gave us everything they had, and mm-hmm. so it was a home full of different kinds of art, but not painting.
Yeah, yeah, like painting was just not in your world. Museums?
No, not when I was young. No.
Right. So tell me how you discovered painting.
Well, in my early 20s, I went to the museum and saw a show of Van Gogh and was impressed.
Which museum?
The Portland Art Museum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was impressed. But I think the thing that really hooked me, Joseph, was a magazine on a journal of psychology, of all things. And it was the image of a beautiful abstract painting. And I'd really never seen an abstract painting. And so it was love at first sight. I haven't been the same since.
And this was an Enzo Brunori painting.
That's true.
Right. Do you remember the name?
That is his name, yeah.
Do you remember the painting's name?
Yes, High and Low.
Now, I looked him up. He's a kind of a, like, looked like crazy paving, like multiple tiles. Is it like that kind of?
As I can remember, it is. I don't have the image anymore. I lost it.
So you just have the impression.
Yeah, I just have the impression of it.
And you thought this is amazing. And did it make you want to be a painter? You were at nursing school, right?
Well, it was just something that spoke to me. And I didn't have a concept of being a painter at the time. I looked at it and I just fell in love with it, and I thought, wow. So at least it made me want to really explore the world of art, mm-hmm. which I began to do.
Right, yeah. Right. And then when did you pick up a brush?
A couple years later, I did. Mm-hmm. I just decided I'll have at it.
Do you know how old you were?
Oh, you shouldn't ask those kind of questions.
Artists need to know
terrible.
These things.
I was in my 20s.
Okay. Yeah. So did you go to art school?
I did. I eventually went to PNCA and got a BFA in painting mm-hmm. and drawing mm-hmm. from PNCA.
Right. And then who were the big influences? Now you look back on your body of work and you look at the artists you loved. Which of those do you think influenced your style?
My style itself, I certainly can see Joan Mitchell has been a real icon for me. You know, a lot of that is because of the conviction in each one of her brushwork is so amazing. And the conviction not only in her brushwork, but how strong and convinced she was of her own whole, all of her work. I love Turner for the atmospheric quality in his work and how he continually explored the possibilities of paint through his lifetime. And you can really see that in the progression of the works. I will have to say that the small studies of clouds that Constable has in the Tate next to the Turners took my breath away. They're very beautiful, and I love those. The other big modern influence was Willem de Kooning, and for me, what he did was create a synthesis of drawing and form, planes in space, and paint into a unity that created a whole new image from what he started with. And he continually explored that process all his working life. And I admire that very much. I'd like to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. If you could send someone to New York to look at one of his pictures, what would it be?
Oh, definitely be the big red painting in the Guggenheim in Soho. It's just a breathtaking drop-dead painting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it? What was it? What kind of picture is it?
Well, it's an abstract painting that he did when he was working on the women's series. But it was at the end of the women's series. And as he progressed in this synthesis that I mentioned earlier, you can actually almost see that in the painting, that he's resolved it in a way that's entirely new but very, very fresh. It's a difficult painting to describe, but I'd go back anytime to see that.
Mm-hmm. And Hans Hofmann was also an influence on you?
Yes. I've read all his writings, and I thought he had some great ideas. I did a master class with Wolf Kahn in New Mexico for a month, and he actually worked us the way Hans Hofmann would have worked us.
Mm-hmm.
And he used the same set of principles in guiding us. And so I found him very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Very valuable.
So you were influenced both by his writing and his painting and his
Student. Yes, yeah. As being a student, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm Joseph Galavan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest was Diane Avio-Auji, whose show Synergy is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery in Pioneer Place Mall until July 14th. There are three galleries at the top of the mall: Mark Woolley Gallery, where Diane's work is, Place, and People's Art of Portland. And together, the three are known as Settlement. So if you can't find it, go up to the top. Thank you for coming in and talking to KBOO, Diane.
Well, the pleasure was mine, Joseph.
And next week's guest on Ava Lake's show is Sean Records. Until then, good afternoon.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
The time is 11:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM in Philomath and Corvallis. Coming up next is Buscando America. And now, the KBOO News at Noon. The U.S. Supreme Court has overturned a key provision of the Voting Rights Act in a decision that civil rights groups say will open the floodgates for racial discrimination in states that have historically engaged in openly racist practices regarding elections. The group Common Cause said the court decision must be answered with quick bipartisan action on Capitol Hill. As recently as 2006, while considering the section of the law invalidated by the court today, Congress conducted more than 21 hearings with 90 witnesses and amassed a 15,000-page record documenting continuing discrimination against minority voters. Russian President Vladimir Putin has told the U.S. government that he will not hand over NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. Putin has now personally confirmed that Edward Snowden is at the international airport in Moscow. The U.S. government has filed a request for extradition, which the Russian government is refusing to carry out. Snowden exposed the largest surveillance program to date, run by the National Security Agency, monitoring the web traffic and emails of Americans. Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber said today that a small business tax cut must be limited if it becomes part of a larger package of public pension reductions and new revenues. Kitzhaber said the cut, promoted by Republican Senators Brian Boquist of Dallas and Larry George of Sherwood, may have unintended consequences by being crafted in the waning days of the 2013 Oregon legislative session. The senators have proposed to reduce the maximum tax rate from 9.9% to 7% for small business owners who pay taxes based on their personal income.